Shrestha guna asi yenedam varsham bharatam iti vyapa nishanti. Translation of Shukala's 100 sons, the eldest named Bharata, is a great exalted devotee qualifying with the best attributes. In his honor, this planet has become known as Bharatvarsha. Therefore, this planet known as Bharatvarsha is also called Punya Bhumi, the pious land. At the present moment, Bhumi or Bharatvarsha is a small piece of land extending from the Himalaya mountains to Cape Comorin. Sometimes it's just called Punya Bhumi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given special importance to the people of this land. Bharat Bhumi Te Hoilo, Manusha Janma Jar. Janma Sattak Kori Kara Parupatar. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. The inhabitants of this piece of land are very fortunate. They can purify their existence by accepting this Krishna conscious movement and go outside Bharat Bhumi and preach the cult to benefit the world. Following Bharat, there were 99 other sons. Among these were 9 elderly sons named Kusha Bharata, Ila Bharata, Brahma Bharata, Malaya, Ketu, Bhadrasena, Indraspruk, Vidarbha, and Kikata. In addition to these sons, there were Kavi, Abhi, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Vipalaya, Avirvodra, Rumila, Chamasaya, Karavajana. These were all very exalted advanced devotees and authorized preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam. These devotees were glorified due to their strong devotion to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they were very exalted. Satisfy the mind perfectly. I shall hereafter describe the characteristics of these 9 devotees when I discuss the conversation between Narada and Vasudeva. Next. 13 editions, these 19 sons mentioned above, there were 81 younger ones, all born of Vrishabhadev and Jayanti, according to the order of the father. They became well-cultured, well-behaved, very pure in their activities, an expert in Vedic knowledge and the performance of Vedic rituals. Thus, they all became perfectly qualified Brahmanas. Apart from this verse, we have good information of how the castes were qualified according to work and quality. Vrishabhadev, a king, was certainly Kshatriya. He had 100 sons, and out of these, 10 were engaged as Kshatriya over the planet. 9 sons became good preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, and this indicates that they were above the position of Brahmanas. The other 81 sons became highly qualified Brahmanas. These are some practical example of how one can become fit for a certain type of activity by qualification of one birth. All the sons of Maharaj Rishabhadev were Kshatriyas by birth, but by quality some of them became Kshatriyas and some became Brahmanas and nine became preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, which means that they were above the categories of Kshatriya and Brahmana. Vrishabhadev, the 100 sons, the eldest named Bharat, was a great exalted devotee, qualified with the best attributes, and in honor of this planet has become known as Bharat and Varsha. Following Bharat, there were 99 other sons, among these were 9 elderly sons, named Kusavarta, Illavarta, Brahmavarta, Malaya, Ketu, Vandrasena, Indrastra, Vidarbha, and Kikata. In addition to these sons, there were Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Buddha, Kapalayan, Abhihotra, Drumala, Chamasa, and Karabhajana. These were all very exalted advanced devotees and authorized preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam. These devotees were glorified in their strong devotion to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they were very exalted to satisfy the mind perfectly. I shall describe hereafter the characteristics of these 9 devotees when I discuss the conversation between Narada and Vasudeva. In addition to these 19 sons mentioned above, there were 81 younger ones, all born of Vrishabhadev and Jayanti, according to the order of the father, they became well-cultured, well-behaved, very pure in their activities, and expert in Vedic knowledge and the performance of Vedic rituals. Thus, they all became perfectly qualified Brahmanas. So, what did Vrishabhadev do? Of course, it is described previously that he had 100 sons, and then after he trained them all up, then he went to the forest. So here the 100 sons are described. Vrishabhadev, of course, is also Supreme Lord. So, that is beyond Kshatriya, Brahman, Vaishya, Sudra, etc. But he's playing the role of a king, or Kshatriya, and he had 100 sons. And we see that they were of different types. So we have the sages who were became the Navayogendras, they were Bhagavatas, very, very great devotees of the Lord. We find that other sons, the majority, were Brahminical in nature, so they took up priestly activities. And 9 of them were rulers of different parts of the Jambudvip. So in this way, he had a variety of types of children, not just one type. So generally the Kshatriya produces Kshatriyas, and Brahmana produces Brahmanas, etc. At least that's the traditional system. And in the Smriti Shastras we'll find many injunctions regarding this, how the castes should not mix, and the if it happens, it's more or less a crime, and those people are considered beyond the Varnashram, they're considered Chandalas or whatever, if they mix the caste up. So, there's an emphasis put upon keeping the different castes or Varnas pure. Which, of course, implies that, therefore, the people in that caste will do those caste duties. The Brahmana does Brahminical duties, and the Kshatriya duties, etc. But we do find exceptions, as this case here, shows. Some of the sons were Brahminical, some were Kshatriya, and some were Vaishnavas. So there was a mixture, and accordingly they did different activities. So the Kshatriyas ruled the kingdom, that was 9 of them, and 81 of them did priestly activities, and 9 of them did activities of preaching, etc. So, though the father was a Kshatriya, he produced the sons of different quality. And accordingly, they did different types of activity. So that this shows that the rule of birth is not always enforced, that there were exceptions to that rule about Brahmins producing Brahmanas and Kshatriyas producing Kshatriyas, etc. Because here we find that Kshatriya produced some Brahminical people and Kshatriya people and Vaishnavas also. So therefore the rule is there in the Smriti Shastras, but at the same time it is not an absolute rule. So this is of course not the only example of this. We'll find other examples in the scriptures as well. So the principles set up in the Varnashram system are general principles, not absolute principles. So we have here, according to qualities and activities, the Varna, not just the birth. So in Kali Yuga this becomes a little more acute, the problem becomes acute because the birth loses its significance even more due to the fact of improper conduct of the different castes not following their duties properly, mixture of castes, etc. So therefore Varna by birth becomes even more of a problem, more of a difficulty. You cannot assume that a person is a Brahmin simply because he's born in a Brahmin family. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, if one is to decide Varnas, we have to go more upon the qualities and the activities of a person than the birth. That's more emphasized. Though in previous ages, the emphasis was put upon the birth, the family lines, etc. So, of course, in Kali Yuga, again, the whole emphasis upon the Varnashram also deteriorates because the whole system declines with the disappearance of Manu's line. So that was previously mentioned, how the last descendants are up in the Himalayas and they won't manifest again until the next Satyuga. So in the meantime, we don't really have qualified kings to institute and maintain that Varnashram system properly. So therefore, it is very difficult to enforce Varnas in this age. Nevertheless, we see that was the general system of order for society, and therefore the kings did this. And throughout the Bhagavatam, we'll see how Dharma is enforced by kings. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, and doesn't seem to work so well, particularly this Kali Yuga. So what to do in that case? So that is why the emphasis put in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam is put upon bhakti. Though generally it is favorable to have dharma in society, what happens when there's no dharma? Or very little dharma. Still, the process of bhakti goes on. Dharma is definitely favorable for bhakti, but even if it isn't there, one can perform bhakti. If the society itself is a dharmic, that doesn't mean that one cannot perform bhakti, one can still do bhakti. And so therefore, in Kali Yuga, whether there is or isn't institution of dharma, still, one can perform bhakti. So therefore the emphasis is not put so much upon the Dharma in Kali Yuga as upon the Bhakti. And therefore, this is the necessity. We must follow bhakti. If we can do other things, fine. But if we cannot, at least we can do bhakti. On the other hand, if we do everything else, we don't do the bhakti, that's also complete failure. So, in other yugas, we have a favorable situation because dharma is intact. And we also have bhakti. Very good. In Kali Yuga, there is much less dharma. One leg of dharma is standing and that also gets destroyed. But that doesn't mean that bhakti also is destroyed. No, bhakti goes on in any case. Just as it is said, whether one is in heaven or hell, one can practice bhakti. So in Satya Yuga or Kali Yuga, one can practice bhakti. Whether it's dharma or adharma, one can practice bhakti. So it does not absolutely depend upon institution of dharma to continue. It goes on anyway. How is it favorable for bhakti? Obviously we know that if one is less sinful, therefore, and one has some ability to control the senses, it's much more favorable for bhakti. One can easily do bhakti if that is so. The one is very simple, it's very difficult to bhakti. And that is a general principle. But we see that even if a person is very simple, if he takes to bhakti, then very good. So we have the case of Ajaleo, or the case of Mrigari the hunter. Very fallen people, they took to the process of bhakti and they succeeded. In spite of the fact they came out of the worst gunas, worst situations. So, in any case, if one practices bhakti, one can transcend the gunas. So, in the varnashram system, the emphasis is put upon doing duties within the gunas and fixing oneself in those particular duties. And then, gradually, over many lifetimes, one is able to become purified. So it's a very gradual process of purification. And if one gets a sattva-guna, then one can begin other processes like dhyana and yoga and bhakti. So it is a slow process of advancement. If one happens to take to bhakti as in the varnashram system, very well and good. One has a stable environment in which one can practice bhakti, so that is very favorable. But even if that is not there, still bhakti can be practiced and bhakti can succeed. So that is the situation. So Lord Chaitanya has ordered his followers to preach the holy name everywhere. So he doesn't say that it has to be where there is dharma or whatever, he doesn't put any condition. So, anywhere in the world we can practice bhakti, spread bhakti, and chant the holy name, etc. No place is excluded in spite of the fact that they don't have dharma. So that is the excellent quality of bhakti. It's a very flexible process which allows it to succeed even in unfavorable circumstances or whatever. So the only important factor there is, of course, that there are devotees to encourage, inspire, and cultivate that bhakti. So it is through devotees, the mercy of devotees, that the seed of bhakti is planted and that seed of bhakti grows. So that is why the devotees are very important. So we'll see later here in the teachings of Vrishabhadeva also. The association of devotees with the mercy of devotees is emphasized that with their mercy alone one can get advancement. So among the sons of Vrishabhadeva we find that nine became very exalted as Bhagavatams, that is, that they were dedicated to the Supreme Lord, that is, they were Vaishnavas. These were the Navayogendras, and later they give teachings. So they were great devotees of the Lord. So they were beyond Brahmas, as is mentioned here. Some became Kshatriyas, 9 became Kshatriyas, 81 became Brahminical, and 9 were beyond that. They were Vaishnavas. So Rishabhadev fortunately had these Vaishnava sons. He, of course, is the Supreme Lord, but we find that his sons, some were Kshatriyas and some were Brahmins, but fortunately then he had very, very great Vaishnava sons also. That doesn't mean the others were demons or anything, no. And they're all devotees of sorts, but they did activities according to the Varnas. Whereas these sons, they didn't even act as Brahmins. They wandered around the universe, more or less, giving teachings. So they were dedicated preaching, spreading the message of the Lord. Whereas the others occupied themselves with particular Varna duties, like doing sacrifices, etc., if they were Brahmins or ruling the kingdom of their Kshatriyas. In any case, all the sons of Rishabhadev were highly qualified for their particular duties. But the most glorious, of course, were their Vaishnavas. And among the sons, and we have one who was most famous of all, that is Varaha. So he acted as a Kshatriya also, but he also became exalted as a devotee. That son became also, after him, the place became known as Bharatvarsha, this particular place. So Rishabhadev had very qualified descendants. No, well, bhakti continues in any case, even at the end of Kali Yuga, when Kalki comes, there are devotees there. So that doesn't get destroyed, but it is predicted in the Brahma Vivarta Purana that 10,000 years will be more favorable. After that, it becomes less favorable.
We found the bull standing one day, leaving for home. So Satya Sultan Samadaya, he dies. And in Kaliga, how can we find someone, all the good qualities are there? Dharma is almost like a...
Yeah, one quarter Dharma left.
So how did he, what was his role on this?
Huh?
What was his role on this?
What's that? Service. Whose role? When he was there, he prevented adharma. He stopped Kali. So dharma was intact. After he left, then again, it continued. So Kali personified destroys three quarters of dharma. One quarter left. And of course that also gets destroyed eventually.
Some of the preaching, I think, next 10,000 years, we are mentioning that.
Well, what is maintained is the bhakti. But as I said, dharma in any way, Kali Yuga, it gets destroyed inevitably. Dharma is destroyed. And so at the end, Kalki comes and kills all the demons. So it is inevitable anyway. But that doesn't mean that bhakti is destroyed. Even if there is no dharma left, bhakti can go on. Of course, it is with struggle and difficult circumstances, but still it goes on.
Can you say that the age deteriorates, the devotees, bhakti also can, people taking bhakti also can, less likely. As the age progresses.
Well, there definitely be less devotees, definitely, because as the situation gets worse and worse, doesn't mean that it's not there, but it's less. And it is the qualified people who are not killed at the end of Kali Yuga who remain, who, for Satya Yuga.
What about the quality of the devotees?
Huh?
It's
up to the devotees. We see that Murgari the hunter became a great devotee of the Lord and became Baba in 3 months. So even if he is in a very fallen condition as a hunter, killing animals, etc., still he got a very high position. So as I said, it's not completely dependent upon you know, having dharma, that we get better devotees or whatever. Even if there's no dharma there, still we're going to have great devotees. Bali Maharaj came in demon family and he became great devotee of the Lord. Well, in any age, real dharma is bhakti, anyway.
Dharma cannot be described.
Huh?
Dharma cannot be described.
Now, which dharma we're speaking of? Varnashram dharma? The ultimate dharma is of course, bhakti, the highest dharma. But a dharma you would speak of as Varnashram dharma, which is generally destroyed in Kali Yuga, or one quarter is there and then the gradually gets destroyed completely. And then it is revived again in Satya Yuga. And then it declines gradually to Kali Yuga again, it's destroyed, and then it is revived again, etc. So it goes on like that. If they're not there. Yeah, obviously. Depends on the government. We don't know. We cannot predict. And then many places are like that now also. You can't do publicly. China cannot do publicly. Up until Kali Yuga. Well, it gradually goes down. It's intact completely in Satya Yuga, and then one quarter is gone in Treta Yuga, half is there in Dwarpa Yuga, one quarter is there in Kali Yuga. So gradually it declines. Same thing. I guess country. Well, there are different varshas or different parts of Jambudvip. So they're called varshas. Nine varshas in Jambudvip.
India is called Bharat in Indian Sanskrit.
Yeah. Well, the country itself are taking as the feminine earth.
They see devotees practicing their service, but at the same time engage in some simple activity. They may even criticize the process.
Well, of course, we can find various types of people doing anything. So, I mean, we criticize anything for that. So you take the best principle or the best thing, and then you can find someone who's not practicing properly. You can criticize them, obviously, because various types of people are going to practice. So rather we have to see, what if we do practice properly, what is the result? That's what we should see. Well, it is part of our the influence of ajnana or ignorance or avidya upon the jiva. That's all. We can say, of course, it's there in the jiva, that avidya, or we say it covers the jiva.
Jai. 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 J வந்து வந்து
ஓர்க்கு